Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. Police around the world are still searching for the Lipinski Stradivarius violin, stolen from Milwaukee Symphony concert master Frank Almond on Monday night. Almond had just finished a concert and was taking the instrument back to his car when he was assaulted. The violin is worth millions of dollars and is a one-of-a-kind instrument, and so within hours, the Milwaukee police enlisted the help of Interpol and the FBI's Art Crimes Unit. That unit was founded a decade ago by experienced investigator Bob Whitman. Whitman has since retired from the agency and now runs a private consulting firm in the same field. Lake Effect's Bonnie North reached him by phone in Pennsylvania, and Whitman talked about how often crimes like this occur and what makes this particular crime distinct.
Well, it's a very significant case. That specific violin's got a fantastic history to it. It's well known. It's got a provenance. It's authentic, and it's a terrible situation when an artifact like that goes missing or is stolen. The whole world loses out on the ability to enjoy it. So it does happen, not that often, but these things do happen quite often. The Davidoff Morini violin was the last Stradivarius that I know of that was taken. That was back in the mid '90s in New York City. So that's been missing ever since that point. So this is not unique. It's happened before. Generally, we do get them back pretty quickly because there's not much you can do with them. Quite honestly, that's the problem with art theft and unique collectible theft. It's sometimes it's easier to steal than it is to sell.
That leads me to ask why people steal it. If it is not easy to fence, it's not easy to get someplace where you can get money back for it, why are people doing this?
Well, Bonnie, throughout my career, I've been doing this since 1988, and I've recovered more than $300 million worth of this type of material. And I've done cases in 22 different countries. So what I've always seen, time and time again, this is just over and over, is that these individuals are better thieves than they are businessmen. They're good at going out and planning a robbery or a theft. They case the institution or the individuals. They know their habits. They know when to move in, and they have a good plan on stealing. But then what happens is they're blindsided because of the fact that they think that these things are so valuable that they can move them on a black market. And basically, there is no black market for these types of materials.
So they really don't understand that they have no market to sell it into.
That's correct. That's what I've seen many, many times. The myth of a Dr. No out there who's collecting, that was started back in the early 1960s by a James Bond movie. And Dr. No in that movie, he was collecting artworks and putting them in his cave. And quite honestly, in 30 years of doing these cases, I've never actually seen that occur. Not to that level where we have famous paintings in caves. So, most collectors are good businessmen. That's why they can afford to collect. And they know the value of having good title of an object and the fact that if you don't have good title, you could be, exposed to a jail term.
So this experience that you've had with these kinds of crimes, is that what leads you to believe this was a targeted crime about money?
Yes. Well, that and the fact that all the crimes I've been involved in investigating throughout the years have always been about money. In the end, even if the collector was interested in the artifacts that they were taking, the thief, then even then it was still about what they were worth and how much they could get for them. So I've always seen it. It's always been about the value of the artifacts, the value of the artwork, much more so than the collection of the artwork.
Has there ever been a case where it was an attempt to defraud, say, an insurance policy?
Well, what you're talking about there is a case of someone trying to commit a ransom. And in the United States, ransom is illegal. It's an obstruction of justice. So therefore, money cannot be paid in ransom legally. So, yeah, there's cases where people are attempting that type of thing, but basically it's an illegal act. And the money doesn't get paid by insurance companies or anybody else. Now, in Europe, it's a different story. There are countries in Europe where items can be ransomed back to insurance companies through payments. Some countries allow that, and that does happen there. The problem with that, and the reason the United States does not allow that to happen, is because, well, first, it's a violation. Like I say, it's obstruction of justice. But also, it's because it creates more crime. Once people start paying ransoms, it makes it economically viable to steal.
Why do you think Europe hasn't put a cap on that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. They work under different jurist systems. They have different laws that they work with, different legal systems. And as I say, you know, not everybody works under the same legal system the United States does. So in those countries that have different legal systems, payment for return of items is legal. So that's just how they run their countries.
So we're not likely to see this show up somewhere in Europe with that kind of a demand put on it.
Not likely, no, because of the fact that it's a stolen property from the United States. I mean, I don't want to get into the legal aspect of it because I'm not an attorney, but since it's a stolen piece of property from the United States, some of the U.S. statutes would apply as to the ability to be able to work a legal deal in another country, because those countries do have stolen property laws, the same as we do, which makes it illegal to import stolen property.
But, of course, if you're dealing with a black market situation, you know, you're not worrying about the law that much anyway.
Well, you know, people use that term, black market, and I guess what they're referring to would be, you know, a quote, collector who is unethical, who wants to buy artifacts cheaply. But, you know, in any event, when you're talking about a seven-figure artifact, you know, there's a certain amount of money that's going to be paid. I can remember one case I did in Copenhagen, Denmark, involving a $35 million Rembrandt that had been stolen at gunpoint from the Swedish National Museum in Stockholm. I was undercover at the time working with the FBI, and we were doing negotiations with the thieves in Copenhagen. And basically, we were going to buy the painting back for $250,000 in cash. So that gives you some idea. If you're talking about a $35 million painting, $250,000 was what we were offering, and they were accepting for the payment. Well, you know, that's a very good discount, so to speak. But in the end, that's still a lot of money. A collector who's going to buy something for $250,000 and not get good title, he's not going to be in the business very long.
Well, you've been quoted in a number of news sources here as saying you think the Lipinski violin is still somewhere here in town. Why do you think that? Why do you think it hasn't moved somewhere away from this police jurisdiction?
Well, because of the time frame at this point. Generally speaking, again, I've seen cases where, let's say, for example, that Swedish Rembrandt. You know, we did the case in 2005, and it was actually stolen at gunpoint from the museum in 2000. So it was still in Sweden 5 years, actually in Stockholm 5 years after it was stolen. I had another case in Madrid where 17 paintings were stolen, worth around $65 million. We did that case within 2 years, and it was all the paintings were still in Madrid. And I've seen that happen over and over again. The thieves don't move the paintings. They hide them wherever it's closest for them. Then they start to go out looking for a buyer. And at that point, that's when we usually catch them, when these thieves start putting the items back up, to bringing them back to market, and they try to monetize their crime. That's when they get caught.
Well, we're not that far removed from Chicago. Do you think that might be a better place for a violin like this one to disappear or try to be sold in months or years to come?
In Chicago?
Yeah, moving it just south 90 miles.
Well, the point there is that this violin's unique. It's well known. It's actually quite famous. And it's in the Art Loss databases now. The FBI database has got a listing of it. And, you know, it's not something that's just going to be able to be sold at a flea market. It's something that if the individuals want to make a good profit on it, they're going to have to go to people who know what they're looking at. So I don't think they're going to have any better luck selling in Chicago than they would in Milwaukee.
In all the time that you worked on cases like this, both with the FBI and now as a consultant, what do you think motivates people? Is it trying to just pull off a perfect crime, or is it really just money and they just don't understand that they can't sell it?
I truly think that in most cases, and I would say probably 95% of cases that we've seen, it's about making money. It's pure greed. It's about, you know, it's about making money in an easy way, making a lot of money very quickly. And, you know, they don't think about how the situation is as it occurs. Now, you know, if you can go out and steal a car, you know, many times you can chop a car up and get more money than the actual car would have been worth by, you know, as a single unit. And so that's why you have chop shops, you know, and when you buy drugs, if you buy a kilo of cocaine, you chop that up into smaller amounts, then people sell that, and they make more of a profit than the actual cost of the whole kilo. But when it comes to art and these types of collectible properties, you can't chop them up, you can't do anything with them. The uniqueness of them, the fact that they are, you know, together in good shape and in good condition, that's what makes them valuable. Yeah, along with, of course, the authenticity, the provenance, and the good title. That's what they don't have. They don't have good title.
Right. And it sounds like that they're thinking that, you know, a kilo of cocaine and the Lipinski Strad are basically the same sort of thing. They're commodities that are worth something, but they're not the same at all.
Oh, no. And when it comes to the sale, they're going to find it's totally different. And that's why the investigation's got to go into a little bit of a different zone than a standard property crime. The beginning of an investigation like this should be like any type of property crime investigation. It doesn't matter if it's a Chevrolet or a Monet when you first start. But once you get into the secondary part of that investigation, then you have to start looking at the collector markets, the individuals who are involved in selling and buying these types of things, and having that and having the business background in the art world.
Well, how likely do you think it is that we'll recover this?
I think that there's a very, very, very high chance, probably in a 90% chance that this violence is going to come back to the world. At some point, it will be recovered. It might not be today. The question is when that's going to happen. Because I can tell you, I had one case involving a original copy of the Bill of Rights, which belonged to the state of North Carolina. It was stolen in 1865 by a Union soldier from the state house in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we recovered it in 2003. So that just gives you an idea. It was 138 years before we got it back.
Well, let's hope that it doesn't take that long for this.
No. We hope not.
Well, Bob Whitman, it has been a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for your time.
Bonnie, thank you, and thanks for having me on. I'm sorry about the theft. It's a loss for all of us.
Bob Whitman retired from the FBI in 2008 after founding the agency's Art Crimes Unit. He now runs a private consulting firm in Pennsylvania and is the author of the memoir, Priceless, How I Went Undercover to Rescue the World's Stolen Treasures. He talked with Bonnie North about the investigation into the Lipinski Stradivarius stolen Monday night in Milwaukee. How a Milwaukee-based group is trying to spark good things in one Milwaukee neighborhood. That story when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.